105 Drive with Julian Clover.
Half past five on the nose, and it means it's time for our musical guest. And as we've been doing for the past, I think, 3 weeks at this time, we've got some people in from the Cambridge Band Competition, which takes place this Friday, week four. And this week we've got the Mojo Slide who are going to be joining with us. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hi. Hello.
Right, this could get complicated. We've got a severe microphone shortage here. Five band members and three microphones. One of those includes mine, but we'll work that out as we go along. So somehow I'm going to get you to all introduce yourselves and say your name just so I can remember later.
Yeah, I'm Mike and I play guitar.
I'm Matt. I'm on mandolin tonight.
I am Marek and I play bass.
I'm Michael, I play drums.
And I'm Mark, lead vocals.
Did you notice that every single band member, their name begins with M? I won't ask if it was compulsory, but it must be so confusing.
We turned down so many Steves, didn't we?
It just wasn't.
They were brilliant at their instruments. But.
It's like a soap where nobody has the first name, only in reverse. You know, it's kind of that thing. Okay, so we're going to get you to play some tracks for us. What are we going to start with?
Right, we're going to start with a little song called Jesus Don't Love Me.
Fortune to the daddy man. Lights flash, heads down, gotta hide a stash. Most shocking where the devil grew a mustache. Now I know I never get to heaven, but a man's gotta live. A man's gotta live. I know I never get to heaven, but a man's gotta live. A man's gotta live.
I'm going to hell.
Jesus don't love me.
I'm going to hell.
Jesus don't want me.
I'm going to hell.
Jesus don't love me. I'm going to hell. I'm going to hell. Hit the skids, crash the pool in a Cadillac. Snorty lines off the back of a model's crack. High hopes, Las Vegas, all dressed in black. Met a preacher man, tell me that it's come back. Now I know I never get to heaven, but a man's gotta live. A man's gotta live. I know I never get to heaven, but a man's gotta live. A man's gotta live.
I'm going to hell.
Jesus don't love me.
I'm going to hell.
Jesus don't want me. Jesus don't love me, I'm going to hell, I'm going to hell.
It'll be fine if you do go to hell, because the devil has all the best tunes, of course. Well-known fact. The music of the Mojo Slide, live on Cambridge 105 this Monday evening. That was pretty good, pretty lively. And normally, you're not acoustic. You normally have the electronic amplification behind us.
That's right, yeah. So this Friday in the Cambridge Band Competition at the Portland Arms, we'll be rocking out with a full electric set. So we'll have drum kits, electric guitars, etc. And Matt will even be bringing his viola. So, but yeah, we do a lot of acoustic gigs as well, so we're quite used to playing the acoustic instruments.
We better go through actually the instruments that you have. Now yours is fairly straightforward. That's a guitar. I'm not going to get that wrong. But I'm always very dangerous at actually getting the names in case there's sort of slight variance. So
this is a mandolin.
I would have guessed that right, but that's pretty good. You was a move from, guitar to mandolin. Is that how it went for you?
If it's got strings, I'll give it a bash. Depending what the song is. So.
Okay, and the box, I always forget the name of there.
Cajon.
Yeah, if into the mic. Cajon. Sorry, Cajon.
Cajon. Yeah. So it's known as the Cajon.
It's strange because it's sort of it almost looks like it's just an old speaker box,
yeah,
really.
Like a stall, really, doesn't it?
Yeah, but it's good. You sit on it and play the thing at the same time.
And you can put your feet up on it too.
That's good. It's multi-purpose. Well, be careful of the microphones, otherwise I'll forget that somebody hasn't got one, despite the fact they've got the headphones on. So tell us a little bit about the band. How long have you been together?
So we've been together since I think November 2011, so a year and a bit now. And most of us got together through a website called joinmyband.co.uk, so very 21st century. But Mark and Mikey knew each other already, and the rest of us basically added ourselves to the band till January we fully formed.
Whenever. Make sure they become with them.
Yeah, everyone had to begin with M, absolutely. In fact, Marek used to be called Cornelius, but he changed his name just so he could join the band.
I like that. It's nice and snappy as well. Yeah. It seems useful.
Cornelius is a very popular name in Poland, isn't it, Marek? Yeah.
And so Marek's also better in headlights. Funny, I think one of our members of our Polish Waves team, our Polish programme here, is called Marek as well. So it's sort of the,
it's obviously a great name.
Is it like a Mike equivalent in Polish, or is it just Mark?
Actually, it's Mark.
It's another Mark.
Does your Marek play any instruments?
I don't know, he might do.
He's got a chance to get in the band. Starts with an M.
We'll go through the schedule, actually, and see who's got the right letter starting their name with. And in terms of playing, I noticed that I think it's Ox Jam you did in Cambridge last year. What other venues have you played and places?
We played Sunfest in St Neots last year.
And headlined the Christmas
Light
Switch On.
Oh yeah, we headlined the Christmas Light Switch On in St Neots,
that's pretty good. How did you get that gig?
We got approached by the promoter who was doing the events organisation, and she came to see one of our gigs. It was actually one of the gigs when hardly any of us was around, so it was just me, Mikey and Mark, and we're playing acoustically, so we had just one acoustic guitar and the cajon.
We had the whole place rocking, didn't we?
Yeah, we managed to get the crowd going, and she loved it.
So you played some songs, C grade celebrity comes along and switches on the lights, or did you get to do that as well?
Well, we like to think that we were you know, better than Chico, which is what Cambridge has.
Oh, it was so, oh, okay.
So Cambridge missed out, you know, with us, I think.
Yeah, no, I think that's possibly highly accurate. Right, one more song before we slander Chico. What do you have for us next?
We have a little song called Red Eyed Devil. It's all about split personalities. It's Mojo time.
I look right in the mirror, what do I see? A red eyed devil staring back at me. He wants to twist your bones on his fiery plane. He's got nothing to lose and a lot to gain. So come on, well come on, yeah. That red eyed devil's got nothing to lose. Well, I look right in the mirror, why do we see a blue-eyed angel staring back at me? Well, it has no reason to fall from grace, but that red-eyed devil wants to take his place. So come on, well, come on, yeah. That red-eyed devil wants to take his place. So come on, come on. out who would see a red-eyed devil staring back at me. Well, he cuts a smile as he takes your soul, and that's enough to make your blood run cold. So come on, well, come on. Staring back at me. He's got God on his side and a loaded gun. He's gonna chase that devil till kingdom come. Well, come on, well, come on, yeah. He's gonna chase that devil till kingdom come. Well, come on, well, come on, yeah. He's gonna chase that till kingdom come. With that red-eyed devil,
when happiness needs, he just wants to make you bleed.
With that blue-eyed angel, he wants to make you pray.
Pray to send that devil away.
Come on!
Two songs involving the devil. I've noticed that. Who's responsible for the writing in all of this?
So for the lyrics, mostly you can look at Mr. Mark Wilkes, and for the music, mostly you can look at me. But it's a bit of a team effort on some of the songs.
Sort of everybody sort of chips in, I guess, you know, with the sort of varied instruments. You kind of want to say, oh, well, you know, this would work quite well at this point, and that sort of thing.
Yeah, there's a lot of trial and error, mostly error, and a fair bit of trial. But it all comes together in the end, and I think we strike at the balance between what we can all put in.
What's the routine? Do you sit down together and do the do the writing, or is it sort of like music first, yeah, and then add in the words?
Bit of a mix. I mean, you know, often, you know, Mark might lay down some lyrics, and I bring a recorder to our rehearsals, a sound recorder, so sometimes Mark will record the vocal line, and then I'll take it home and write the music to it, and then we'll bring it to the rehearsal and work on it together. Or other things, you know, Matt wrote lyrics and music to one of the songs that we're working on at the moment. So, yeah, it's a bit different depending on the song.
I'm going to ask what the kind of gestation period was from the moment you had that, like, first idea, that first spark for the song, to the time that you end up performing it on stage somewhere.
It's usually, it's a bit mixed, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's usually, like I say, I'll write the words to it, and then the next band practice that will come up, and Mike has a little recorder, and I'll record into the recorder. I'll come up with the song itself and, just the melody to it. Yeah. So all I need him to do is put the music to it. Occasionally,
all he needs me to do. I love that. That's a classic lyricist, isn't it? I wrote all the lyrics. You just sort of wrote the rest. It's easy.
basically, because I am musically
Illiterate.
Because, of course, when Elton John and Bernie Taupin first started writing songs, I think Taupin was based in Lincolnshire at the time. They just send Elton the lyrics by post, you know, and Elton have to put the music to it. And if they were lucky, it became a number one hit and a number one album as well.
Yeah, and it came back to the gestation point. I mean, we have gone from, you know, literally writing a song, playing it, and then going to the studio within a week, versus, you know, the opposite of, you know, stuff we're working on for a long time.
And sometimes it'll just take a lot longer, months, but we eventually get there, don't we?
Exactly.
What about the band competition? Tell us what attracted you to do that.
It's Strawberry Fair, I think.
Strawberry Fair. They sort of you like the idea of being able to, you know, play on one of the stages there, I guess.
Well, I think our overall gain really is because the way the music industry is at the moment, it's so difficult for any band to get anywhere, and it seems sucked up with all these sort of indie bands that now sound like boy bands and boy bands that sound like indie bands, and we want rock and roll. I mean, at the end of the day, rock, you know, it's like I can't remember it. Keith Richards said, he said, there's so many bands these days that know how to rock but they don't know how to roll, and I like to think we're the exception.
What do you think is one of the things I've noticed, particularly over the last year or so, is the number of particularly 80s bands who are coming back and having another go. And I think to myself sometimes, hang on a moment, I'm playing the same artists here that I was playing 20 years ago. That's not supposed to how it's worked. They're supposed to be consigned to oldies. And is that part of it, that sort of logjam which has somehow developed, well, the lack of ability to break through?
They don't really clog up the charts. For me, it's... I mean, I don't like to name drop.
No, go ahead. We name drop.
Okay, say you've got a band like The Wanted. Now, they'll do a song that sounds a little bit like Example. Now, Example claims to have all this indie credibility. I mean, in my opinion, he hasn't. But, I mean, he desperately clings on to that. And so you've got these two sort of, like, bands, an artist, that are making similar music. It's not exactly the same, but, you know, and there's all these euphoric... They mix euphoric dance music with indie music as well. So it all gets mashed together, and they all end up sounding quite similar. For me, it's, you know, I've always loved indie music, but I've gone a little bit disillusioned with it. So rock and roll it is.
I guess it's like alternative comedy, you know, something like Dawn French declared she was an alternative comedian, and then, of course, her greatest hit is The Vicar of Dibley, well-known alternative comedy show.
I think you've got to be philosophical about it as well, isn't it? From artists who are performing in the 60s, like David Bowie, he's a great artist, and great artists are always going to be there or thereabouts in the charts, and now his album's at number one. There'll be artists from the 70s, from the 80s, they're always going to hang around if they're good enough. So I think it's healthy competition for us to keep fighting, really, isn't it?
Does it have the wrong type of influence, or maybe it's the right type of influence on bands like yourselves wanting to come through?
Well, I think obviously the biggest inspiration in music really at the moment is the Rolling Stones. I mean, they're going strong, headlining the O2, and just, you know.
And their new material's good.
Yeah, exactly.
And to be fair, a little bit of me thinks, you know, it's quite arrogant of us to think about, you know, what people should like. At the end of the day, if it's good music, it will sell. And if it isn't, it won't. And the charts are a symptom of that. And arguably some of the stuff in the charts is, we could say, isn't to our taste. But I think it's a bit harsh of us to judge everyone who likes pop.
I disagree.
But we'll
disagree. We're here for a while and we're going on at that, mate. If people enjoy your music, where do they get to hear it? On online, assorted websites, no doubt?
Yeah, absolutely. If you head onto the facebook.com/themojoslide,
word.
facebook.com/themojoslide, then there are links to all of our videos, free downloads, join the mailing list, you'll get loads of stuff on that as well. So do go there, and obviously come to our gigs. All our gigs are listed on there as well.
Okay, where's the next, other than Strawberry Fair, which of course Friday at the Portland Arms, what's your next one after that?
Third of May. We're in Picket Falcon in St Neots, I think.
Well, we've got Friday, haven't we?
Friday, yeah.
And then next Thursday, we've got the Picket Falcon in St Neots, the band, Battle of the Bands down there.
Yeah, that's true. We're in another competition, aren't we? Next Thursday, yeah.
Right. Okay.
Come down, Battle of the Bands, Picket Falcon, fight for us.
I can't hear you. Microphone helps, sorry.
Picket Falcon, 28th, next week, Thursday. It's a bank holiday Thursday as well. Before the Friday as well, so you ain't got no excuse.
You'll have a
drink and folk for us.
Maundy Thursday, that's it, isn't it?
It's not a school night, really, is it? The next day,
exactly.
That's the key thing. Right, we've got time for one more, I think. So what are we going to get?
Yeah, Addicted.
Yeah,
okay.
Just like a mother, she takes your hand and she grabs for another. She pleads you, but she'll tease you all night long. She's fine, but rotten to the core. She's fine, but nothing but a whore. Addicted to the rush she gives to you. Your friends are saying to get out. Your friends say you should live without. Addicted to the drug she is to you. And she takes your hand, makes a grab for another. She takes your hand and just like a mother. She takes your hand and she grabs for another. She'll tease you and she'll bleed you all night long. Just like a mother, she takes your hand and she grabs for another. She teases you and she'll bleed you out. She takes your hand, makes you grab for another. She takes your hand, just like a mother. She takes your hand and she grabs for another. She teases you and she'll bleed you.
Fantastic. Well done, guys. And Friday night, do you know when you're on? Which one?
I think we're on at 20 past 10 on Friday night, the Portland Arms, just off Chesterton Road.
OK, part of the Cambridge Band competition. Live, of course, on Cambridge 105. Our coverage begins at 7. I think the competition normally begins around about 8:30, if my memory serves me right. But the music there, one of the bands taking part, the Mojo Slide. Guys, thank you very much for coming into 105.
All right, Cambridge 105 is supporting Alzheimer's Research UK once again this year with their big walk. It takes place on the 9th of June, and their ambassador for this year's event is very well-known athlete. It's Goldie Sayers. Hello, Goldie.
Hi, hi there.
Hello, how are you doing?
Good, thank you. Enjoying the slightly strange weather at the moment.
Yes. What's this weather like to train in? I shouldn't think it's particularly pleasant, is it?
Horrendous. It's not the most inspiring, but then having said that, we're quite fortunate and then we have lots of great indoor facilities, or not lots of them, but a few of them. So I'm based in North London now, enjoying being able to train indoors.
Definitely. Well, people who don't know, and I'm sure everybody does know, that you are a javelin thrower, and you took part in the Olympics briefly last year before you were struck down by injury. And I know you're on your way back from that at the moment. But the main reason why you're the ambassador for Alzheimer's Research is because you are a local girl. You were born in Newmarket.
Yeah, I am. Yeah, I've always had strong links with Cambridgeshire, and grew up in Newmarket and went to school in Ely and lived in Cambridge, so I know the area very well. So with Combington being where the big walk is starting and finishing from, I know the area very well.
How long did you spend in this area? When was it that you moved away?
I only actually moved away a couple of years ago. I went to university in Loughborough, but then came back to train in Cambridge actually for quite a few years, and I've only just moved to London in the last couple of years.
Okay.
Still come back to Cambridge to train.
Yeah, have you got family, anybody that, that lives in this area that you have reason to come back and visit?
Yeah, I've still got friends there. My mum lives in Ely, so I'm in Cambridgeshire as much as I can be.
Cool. All right. So you're supporting Alzheimer's research once again this year. It's not the first time you've done this. I understand you were supporting them the first time round, which is a couple of years ago. Obviously, the big walk has developed a lot since then. They raised a lot of money last year, and I know they're trying to raise even more this time. When was it that they got in touch with you, and what was it that made you want to be involved with this charity?
Well, it's a few years ago now, Alzheimer's Research UK got in touch, and I just feel it's one of those charities that is hugely underfunded in comparison to charities that raise money for cancer and heart disease and those things. And actually, it costs the UK economy more than what dementia does cost the UK economy more than cancer and heart disease put together. So I just thought it was appropriate for me to raise a bit more awareness, especially in the county, and get people involved in the big walk.
Yeah. Do you think it's important for people with a sort of status such as you, well-known people, that they get behind charities and help raise awareness of these sorts of things?
I think, yeah. I mean, we're in quite a privileged position, and with the Olympics last year, there was a bit more profile around sport. And, you know, what we do is more fry, really, compared to the research that goes into disease. And ultimately, for me, you know, good health is the number one priority in life, I think. And you know, it's important to support charities that promote healthy causes.
Definitely. Well, as I think you've already said before, it's important to stay active, and it's one of those things that's been proven to help offset the signs of dementia is being active. So doing this sort of walk is an important thing, and maybe it'll encourage people that take part to be more active in the future.
Definitely. I think, you know, the Olympics certainly helped that last year. And even if, you know, you're not directly related to or know anybody who suffers from dementia, I think it's a good way of just getting outside and exploring some of the countryside around Cambridge that you weren't aware existed even, and just being sociable. And that's a huge positive as well. Hopefully we can raise as much money as possible.
Definitely. Have you got any experience of anybody that with Alzheimer's in the past? Do you know what it's like for either a family member or friends?
Yeah, a best friend of mine, a parent of theirs, suffered quite badly from dementia. And it's not just the person suffering from the illness that it really affects. It's those around them. And I think that's the trickiest part of it. You know, it's one of those kind of silent diseases that we don't often talk about, but it, you know, it does affect families very strongly. And you know, the more we can do to research it, I think, you know, I read a statistic that 1 in 3 people over the age of 65 will suffer from one form or other of dementia. So I think, you know, whilst you are healthy and active, it's important to help to research diseases that you or, you know, somebody in your family could eventually suffer from.
Yeah, no, as you say, Alzheimer's is underfunded, and I know more people in my family life and friends that have suffered with Alzheimer's or a form of dementia than I do that have suffered from cancer or heart disease. And as you say, that those tends to be the things that are more widely funded. So it definitely needs more funding, not to say the others don't, but it's certainly important. So the big walk takes place on the 9th of June. It's in Comberton. Obviously, you're not able to come along yourself. I know you're busy training at the moment and getting over your injury, but you'll be there in spirit with all the people that are walking that day. Have you got any tips for anybody that's taking on a walk such as 9 miles, perhaps it's something they've done for the first time? What would you recommend that they did in terms of preparing themselves for that sort of thing?
I think make sure you have walked as, you know, a fairly solid distance before trying. Make sure you've got decent footwear, I think, would be number one. You're wearing the appropriate clothing according to the weather conditions. I'm just looking out the window. Yeah. It's snowing here. So I think get layers involved and hydrated, I think, is the main thing. It could be bright sunshine.
We hope so.
In June, hopefully. Yeah. So yeah, I think hydration is key. But most importantly, just enjoy it. And you won't, if you think it's a long way at the moment, if you enjoy yourself, you'll almost think it was half the distance, I'm sure.
Yeah, definitely. All right, well, thank you very much for taking the time to chat to me. I appreciate that, and thanks for supporting Alzheimer's research. I know that they're very appreciative of you and your work for the charity. And if anybody wants to get involved, they can give this number a call. It's 0300 111 5555. So that's 0300 111 5555, or email bigwalk@alzheimersresearchuk.org. You can find those details on our website, and we'll be having more interviews with people from Alzheimer's Research UK as the weeks go on leading up to the big event. Thanks very much again, Goldie.
Great, no problem.
Cheers.
Thanks a lot.
I'm very pleased to welcome into the studio Amy Byrne. Amy, good evening.
Hello, Neil.
Now, you're the Community Fundraising Officer at Alzheimer's Research UK, based here in Cambridge.
I am, yes. Yeah?
Tell us what it is that you do.
So I'm a Community Fundraiser for Alzheimer's Research UK. We've recently relocated from Great Shelford to Great Abingdon.
Mm-hmm.
And Alzheimer's Research UK is the UK's leading dementia research charity. My role is to encourage our supporters and our fundraisers to keep giving wonderful donations to help fund the desperately underfunded research that is needed to cure and find treatments for dementia.
So the government don't write you out a big check every year then?
No, we don't receive any government funding, unfortunately.
Really? So why is it that all the things that really need fixing in this country, health-wise, don't receive government funding? Yet daft ideas for painting a mural on the side of a skyscraper or something does. Well, how does that work? So everything's voluntary?
It is. It's all. Everybody that fundraises for us, all that money goes into the pot to fund grants and research projects to help find treatments, cures, and eventually a cure, and preventatives. So all that money and wonderful support that we get from our supporters UK-wide, it all goes straight back into that pot to help fundraise for that purpose.
Now, it was made very clear before you came on air that you are not a medical person.
No.
It just strikes me that they're making headway on this, aren't they? It's not like you're searching for the Holy Grail. You're starting to get to the grips with this one now. There seems to be some distinct clues.
Absolutely. There's so many things being learnt about Alzheimer's and dementia, and knowledge is key to helping find these preventatives and treatments. So some of the research projects that we've got going on have originally found, we were the people to find two key proteins which are linked to dementia.
Right.
And we're working on other sources of proteins and finding out how it affects the brain and what brain diseases there are. So dementia is the sort of umbrella term.
Sure.
And Alzheimer's is the most common form and of known to people, so which is why we have Alzheimer's within our brand name, because it's a more recognisable brain disease. And it's important that people know that Alzheimer's isn't a natural part of ageing. It is a brain disease. So that's really key to people understanding that, and to know that there is help available and that they're recognising signs early to go and get support and care.
It's interesting you say that, because, I mean, I'm in my early 50s, and a lifelong friend of mine who's a year younger than me, he was the one with the brains of the two of us at school. He was a tax accountant for a national firm of accountants, one of the big names. And he's actually stepped down, and he's actually taken an early retirement. And he said to me, because I've had MRI scans and things, and I'm showing early signs of dementia. And it was stuff like he was having phantom smells, and then he's lost his sense of smell, and he's now nouns. He said they gave me like 20 pairs of nouns, like chair and table, and just read out 20 random names. I couldn't remember more than two. And this is a man in his early 50s, and it absolutely staggered me. I thought, crikey. And this is, people perhaps are a little bit closer to Alzheimer's than they often realise. Is that right? I mean, it does affect more people, and dementia as a wider thing affects more people than perhaps people realise. Just put down to he's getting a bit forgetful, but it's not, is it?
The thing is, we're an ageing population, and with that, so many more people are affected by Alzheimer's, unfortunately. There are preventatives, treatments that are available. And if you are worried about forgetfulness or your memory, loss of memory, things like this, you should go and see your GP if you do have any worries. But there are 820,000 people in the UK which actually suffer from Alzheimer's and dementia, and 6,000 of those are actually in Cambridgeshire alone.
No.
So it really is close to home, and people need to seek advice if they do sort of think that they may know somebody with Alzheimer's or dementia or are worried about it. But it is important also to know that it is persistent forgetfulness. It's not a case of simply forgetting where your keys are and putting them in the front door, as many of us do, but it's forgetting what the key is actually for and yes. how you use it.
Right.
So it's a lot more in-depth than sort of just forgetting things, and it is important that people don't worry, but they should seek advice.
It's a fine line, isn't it, between yes, worrying unnecessarily and then getting something checked.
Absolutely. So, yes, I mean, if people are worried, then they need to sort of see their GP, but don't sort of go out there. Yeah, don't panic.
Okay, so you've got a fair few quid to raise each year, and a couple of years ago you came up with the idea of the Big Walk.
Yes.
And how's that? This is now year three we're talking about this
it
year.
It is. We started the Big Walk in 2011. So far we've raised £60,000.
Wow.
So that's a phenomenal amount. In the first year we were astounded by the turnout. It was absolutely fantastic. They raised £40,000 in the first year alone, which was absolutely brilliant. And this year we're looking to raise £30,000 and have 300 participants. So we'd really like people in Cambridgeshire to sign up and join us for the Big Walk.
And is it a case of they have to get sponsorship, or they're paying to enter, or a mixture of both?
It is a sponsorship event, but there is a registration fee to pay. So it's £15 for 18s and overs, and £7.50 for 18s and under. Under 18s. We've sort of said that there's a minimum sponsorship of £100, but it's not a condition of the walk.
Right.
So people don't need to be put off by the fact that it's a sponsored event. But we do encourage as many sponsorship opportunities as possible, which obviously in turn ups the pot intake to put more money into research.
Okay, so let's just go through the dates and times of this. This is according to the list I've got here, which has got a Cambridge 105 logo on it, Stuart, which is always very impressive. Sunday the 9th of June.
It is, yeah.
10 a.m. start. Whereabouts are we heading from? How does this work?
So we're heading from Comerton Village College in Comerton, Cambridge.
Right.
It's a 9-mile circular route round Comerton, Hardwick and Toft. It's beautiful countryside off-road rural route. It's rambling through the countryside and lovely woods as well. It's very peaceful. And so that's a 9-mile walk. This year we have an addition of a 2-mile walk as well. So for people who don't necessarily have a lot of time or can't make the whole day, mm-hmm. but would still like to take part in a fundraising activity, it's there for people who would like to do that, and also for people who are not quite able to do the full 9 miles and would just but still like to take part.
I mean, just from my local knowledge, because I live in Highfields Caldecott, so I live out there, my son goes to Comberton. There's a bit of a hill, isn't there, between Toft and Hardwick? There's a bit of a hill, but it's not. If you take your time, and have we got all day to do this?
Yep, it's open for 7 hours, the course. So
that's doable,
by 5 p.m. If you're still walking, then we will come and pick you up.
Fair enough. So it's not a huge. It's pretty much a flat. It is a bit of a rise.
There's a tiny little bit of a rise, but it's a nice steady pace, and you can really go at your own pace. And it's just a fun day for everybody to get involved. I mean, last year we had some pushchairs, so you know people really made it a nice day out.
Right. Okay. So. If it's pushchair friendly, that's doable, isn't it?
There are some areas which are restricted. We do actually say that in our terms and conditions, but we did have pushchairs last year and lots of people took part. So it is doable.
And it's not a race, is it?
It's absolutely not a race, no. It's just an enjoyable day out for everybody to congregate and raise some money and awareness for Alzheimer's Research UK.
Amy's in from Alzheimer's Research UK. We're very pleased to say that we're media partners for Alzheimer's Research on the Big Walk, which is Sunday the 9th of June. We've just been talking about it. 10 a.m. start. From Comberton Village College, and a walk through to Cambridgeshire country. The best bit, actually, because out to the west is really rather nice. He says, with a house that might be going on the market soon. so just to recap then, we've got over 18s are £15, under 18s, £7.50 to register, but we'd like some sponsorship as well. Yeah?
That's correct.
Should we hit the phones? Because I feel a Cambridge 105 team coming on. Do you want
to? Well, I think apart from yourself and perhaps Steve, one of the station directors.
Oh, listen to this. That's your station manager for you. Right, okay. He's put his phone straight on divert. Okay. Yeah, sorry. Okay, so there's me.
And then there's Steve Potter. Shall we try Steve Potter?
Should we try Steve? Yeah, okay.
Okay, okay, let's see what happens.
All right, you try Steve.
I was just telling him, is he going to come along, basically?
Yeah.
Do-do-do-do-do. Hello, Steve. How are you?
I'm good.
Neil has instructed me live on air. I'm to phone you up and ask you if you're coming to Alzheimer Research Big Walk on Sunday the
9th of June, Steve, the Cambridge 105 team. He's gone quiet.
No pressure, Steve. We're not on air or anything.
Yep. Okay, fine. We'll put him down. Okay, let's try another one. Here we go. Let's just try this. Let's just see if this works. People everywhere are just checking their phones now to see if they're ringing. They're running for the...
Welcome to the
O2. Right, don't worry.
Another time.
Don't worry, Amy. I've got their names. I've got their numbers. There will be a Cambridge 105 team there.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Even if it's just me and you, Stuart. Excellent. All right, we'll drum up. We're going to drum a team up. And everyone seems to be wearing mauve T-shirts.
Yes, that's our brand colour. So purple is our brand colour. It's really lovely, actually, when everybody's doing the walk. It's just like a big sea of purple T-shirts and Everybody's rumbling through the fields. So it's a really nice sight and really clear.
And just looking at the photographs from, but this is presumably from last year. I mean, it's all ages, isn't it? It really is. You were saying this earlier, it's a nice day out. Yep. It is all ages, isn't it?
Last year, we had from toddlers right up to the age of 75 years old. So there really is that significant range in ages, and really anybody can take part, and it really is fun. I mean, we have a great big warm-up at the start where it's for all ages and abilities to join in and have that boost before they go on their journey, and then to return back to the hall. So it's really great.
And you're getting back this year, I understand, by Goldie Sayers as well.
We are, yes. We've got the fantastic support of Goldie Sayers this year. She's happily supporting us and really driving forward the need for everybody to get involved and back the walk and join in, and from the exercise point of view as well as from the Alzheimer's Research UK backing.
And for those who don't know who Goldie is, she's
an Olympian javelist.
There you go.
So yeah, she's fantastic.
All being well, on Thursday we should have an interview with her as well, because we're ramping this up, aren't we? This isn't the first time you're going to be in about this. We've got a while to go yet. It's not until June.
Yeah, you've kindly agreed to back us up every week until the walk. So we've got quite a few people coming in to chat to you. So I believe we've got one of our fundraisers and supporters. So there's Goldie as well, our media officer, and our fundraising manager. So there's lots of people to come in and chat to you.
Fab. Right, we need to get a training programme organised for us lot. We will be putting a team in, I can say that categorically live on air. So if you'd like to join us, we'd love you to. Come along, meet the Cambridge 105 people. Come along, have a chat. I mean, can you take a picnic on this sort of thing? Can you stop off halfway around? Is it really you've got to keep going?
It's 9 miles, so it's not too strenuous. We will be providing water and cereal bars for the walk. So there will be snacks as you go along as well, which are kindly donated by corporate supporters. So that's absolutely brilliant of them. So yes, there will be that supplied, and it should be a really lovely day, and really hoping the weather's going to turn
out
well
fine.
For us.
You can take it from us. That's just booked and done. That's not a problem.
Excellent. Thank you.
That's the least we can do, isn't it? We can arrange the weather, can't we?
I'll write up in the
if you
weather
could.
Script.
Yeah. If you could, just pop it in there. So just run us through the contact details if people want to find out some more.
Absolutely. So you can contact the Big Walk team on 0300 115 777. That's 0300 115 777. Or you can email bigwalk@alzheimersresearchuk.org. Please note that Alzheimer's Research UK is all one word. So it's bigwalk@alzheimersresearchuk.org. Or you can visit our Facebook site, which is www.facebook.com/ARUKSBigWalk. And you can register online by just popping in Alzheimer's Research UK into a search engine on Google, and it should pop up and follow the feed to the Big Walk page.
Fantastic. We've got all those details. If you're driving along and you're stuck on the A14 at the moment thinking, I haven't got a pen, it's in the boot of the car in my briefcase, don't worry, we've got all the details here. And let's face it, you're going to hear these details an awful lot more between now and the big event. Amy, we'll see you on the day.
Yep, absolutely.
I should be doing this in my shorts from now on, because we're going to be in training. Bring your spikes in as well, Stuart. it sounds like great fun.
Yes, it will be a great day.
Excellent. We'll be there. And if you'd like more details, don't forget, that's just check out this big walk at alzheimersresearchuk.org, facebook.com/ARUKS, big walk. So that's ARUKS. Big walk. And you can also check out the website, alzheimersresearchuk.org/big-walk or 0300 111 577. Amy, thank you for coming in.
Thank you very much
and
for
we'll look
me.
Forward to this interview with Goldie on Thursday with Julian.
Yep.
And keep us posted.
Thank you very much for your support.
Yes, least we can do. Waiting patiently in the wings, and thank you, Lee, for waiting, is Lee Chambers. Lee's one of two new presenters joining us here on Cambridge 105 tonight. It's Lee and Alex Rouget. Not bad for a first go. And you're presenting a new programme called Book Night.
Book Night, yes. We're going out every fortnight on a Wednesday night from 10 o'clock, and it's an hour long. And we're discussing books and writing, all things to do with literature, really. So we've got interviews, studio guests, people reading, anything connected with books.
Okay, so tell us how you two met and how you got involved with the whole idea.
Well, Alex and I first met actually through our children. Both our daughters were playing together at school and right. We got to know each other as mums do. At that time, I was finishing an MA in creative writing at Anglia Ruskin University and Alex was thinking about starting. So we sort of grew closer really over literature and writing. And that was about 3 or 4 years ago, and we've become really good friends since then. And we're interested in the same things. Alex is a short story writer primarily, and I'm trying to finish a novel.
And wow.
Yeah.
Where do you start?
With a novel.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been a long process, put it that way. It's taken me about 4 years to get a first draft. I'm just finishing editing it for the first time. It's a long process.
It must be, with any form of creative writing, be it a short story or something more of a tome like yours, it must be very difficult not to get halfway through and realise what you've actually just done is rewritten your favourite story that you've already read. Is that kind of strikes me. I always got this idea for a novel and I realise actually I've read that.
The middle bit's the hardest because most people know where they want to start and they know where they want to finish. But there's a lot in the middle. You have to have subplots and obviously various characters, not just your main character. So people sometimes get to the middle bit and think, actually, I've just run out of steam, you know. And most novels now are in the region of 80 to 90,000 words. So it has to be substantial. It has to have some meat in it, really, to get published these days.
There was always a problem, wasn't there, with vanity publishing, where people could write a book and for a few quid they could get a few hundred copies of a book ran out for themselves. Mm. We had a similar problem, really, with music. And then along came the internet and suddenly it's okay to knock a tune together up on a computer in a bedroom and if you can get it onto MySpace and onto iTunes and people download it, away you go. Is there an equivalent with creative writing? Are people sort of publishing themselves more nowadays?
Yeah, you can. You can. If you've got a novel, you can actually publish it on Amazon. You can get an ISBN number and everything. You can upload your whole document onto Amazon. Now, whether anybody buys it is another thing. And, of course, what most writers want is to be read.
Yes.
So people's first route will be to go to an agent and hopefully to get a mainstream publishing house. But I think that idea of vanity publishing is slightly faded now because there have been some very self-respecting novels that have done well, that have been self-published, that have gone on to win awards. So right. I think the whole kind of image is changing of that.
OK, so talk us through the programme then. You've got episode one up tonight. It must be very difficult. You've got an hour to fill of spoken word. Where did you start?
Well, at first we were talking about a two-hour show and thank goodness we didn't go down that route yet. An hour is a long time,
isn't it?
But we fill it and hopefully it's interesting. Tonight's show, we're looking at memoir, life writing, as it's called, when people choose to write about their lives, either a particular period in their lives or the whole thing. So we've got in the studio, we've got a guest called Azadeh Moaveni, and she's had two books published about her life. She's Iranian-American, so she talks about being Iranian in America and American in Iran.
That's two very contrasts. It's about as poles apart as you could get, yeah, given the history of those two, isn't it?
Yeah, and she's a beautiful writer. So we talked to her about the whole experience of life writing, how she chose what to put on the paper, what she did with it afterwards, etc. And then we've got interviews with Joanne Lindbergh, who's a Cambridge author, and she's written a book about having OCD and the effect that that's had on her life. And also talked to Midge Gillies, who lives in Ely, and she's a life writing tutor. So we cover the subject from all different angles.
You really haven't you? We'll take a quick break for some music and the traffic and travel, and we're back to have a bit more of a chat. Lee Chambers is with us from Book Night, which you might just set your alarms. It's on tonight, 10 o'clock here on Cambridge 105. And we were saying off air, inside everybody there is a book.
Yes, and the end of that quote is that usually it should stay inside them. But lots of people are writing, and that's one of the reasons for doing this programme, really, because all around Cambridge, I mean, Cambridge is just teeming
with... It's got to be the place for it, isn't it?
Yeah, readers and writers, you know, everybody's in a book group, there are lots of writing groups, there are lots of writing courses. So we know that there's an audience out there for a book programme, so hopefully they'll all tune in tonight.
So if someone's listening, and it must sit, as you say, inside everybody there is a book. Inside somebody there is a Booker Prize winning stuff. There's an orange prize or whatever. At what point do they come to you and say, this is what I'm thinking of doing? When should they approach a creative writing course or people to help them to actually get that book out? Should they do a rough draft and then have somebody pull it apart and say, do you know what, you can't even write a sentence properly? Or should they start with guidance right at the start?
Well, it's hard. I mean, some people don't want to show their writing to anyone. They just want to work and beaver away and then submit it to an agent. And that works for them. For me, I would say go to a writing group as soon as possible. I go to a writing group and it's absolutely invaluable. Their feedback, I just couldn't do without it.
How did you start? What did you go in with? A rough idea, a few sketch notes?
Oh, well, a first chapter. You know, they've read the whole of my book, which is about 90,000 words, and they've read it from chapter one. Wow. And some people have come into the group and left the group, so some people have started the book halfway through. But whenever I send it out to be read, I always provide a précis. And really, they're looking at, does it stand up as a piece of writing? Is this character believable? Is the dialogue credible? Mm. Does that image work? You know, they're looking at it from a very technical point of view, as indeed most writing groups do. And that's the only place, I think, as well as MA or writing courses, that you get that kind of technical feedback. Because, to be honest, when you show it to friends, unless they're writers, they tend to say, you know, yeah, it's okay.
Yeah.
And that's okay, but what you need is someone who will drill down and say, actually, you know, that image there, that just isn't working. Or that character, what's he doing? You know, he's in that scene and then you never mention him again. And you need somebody to say it. And once they've said it, you go, oh, yeah, of course.
Well, I've got to say, the most disappointing book I've ever read in my life was, I think, a book called The Rope Spinner Conspiracy.
Right.
And it was this sort of thing you buy at the airport, you're taking Lana Beach, and it was just a waste of about 4 days of my life, this book.
You never get that back, do you?
No, because it was a story of financial intrigue and this guy who had been in the financial world and had made his money, but then he decided to leave it all and become a vicar, and then suddenly the church was involved. And you think, hang on, hang on.
Yeah.
None of this adds up. And you wonder how on earth a book like that gets to print. And then someone like J.K. Rowling, it started very slowly for her. Yet someone else has got this guy published and he's in airports and everything. And you think, how did that happen?
Well, I wonder that all the time, actually. I mean, I think most of the books out there are pretty good, but occasionally you read something and you think, what?
Yeah.
You know, this just doesn't make sense. It's poorly written. A lot of people say that, say about 50 Shades of Grey. Yeah. The number of people who've read that and say it to
you're
me,
all gone very quiet. You guys are.
It's annoying,
yeah.
And yet, look at that. You know, that is just massive. And I think that's huge because it's filled a niche in the market. Not necessarily because it's well written. I think maybe the people who want to read that, to be honest, aren't really bothered whether it's well written or not. They want a kind of sexy story, and it's delivering there. So, yeah, I agree with you. There are some stinkers out there, and there are some people who are hammering on doors waiting to get in, like J.K. Rowling. How many agents turned her down? Yeah. It was 16 or something ridiculous.
And in the end, the public were the ones who were buying it, and then someone said, hang on a minute, they're selling these.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
It's just bizarre.
But, you know, there are lots of different kinds of readers. Some people like romantic fiction, science fiction, fiction, historical fiction. You know, there's all those different genres. So, for example, I mean, I'd never read, really, in the last 10, 15, 20 years even, a science fiction book. I don't often read crime novels. But they are out, you know, they are huge
genres. They are
genres,
the big sellers, aren't they? They're the holiday ones again, aren't they? It does strike me that, you know, it's Christmas presents and when you go on holiday are the two times when you really do think, a book.
Yeah, yeah. And you can just switch off and go into a world. You know, there's nothing like it. We all want to be told a story, don't we? That's why we watch films. That's why we read books. That urge to be told a story just never goes away.
No, No, and the fact that you can go back, I mean, I loved it with my own children, that you can go back and read children's stories as a full-grown adult with a full excuse. Yeah. It's like, wow, we can go and do Winnie the Pooh? Really? And not the Disney sanitised version, but the original A.A. Milne, properly written type stuff. And you can go back and do that. And I've still got kids who, on Christmas Eve, insist on having The Night Before Christmas read to them and Good King Wenceslas. They're 21 and 16, by the way. But that, they still like that magic. And I know that they'll pass that down to their children. Is it staying with paper as well? How are you seeing this switch to Kindle and stuff like that? Is it affecting the way people do it, the way books work?
It depends who you talk to, doesn't it? Some people say, I've got a Kindle and I read paper books, mm-hmm. for want of a better word. And some people say, I could never read paper books after I've read my Kindle. And other people say, I could never go to a Kindle, I prefer a paper book. I think the industry as a whole is still undecided about it because for young people, my daughter has a Kindle. And to be honest, it's fantastic because she reads at a rate of knots. So she downloads books, you know, every 2 or 3 days. We're not thinking about where to store them.
No.
She will grow up reading on a Kindle. She still reads paper books, but that will be how she reads a book. Whereas for those of us who haven't grown up reading on a Kindle, I like the feel of a book
my
hands. I like cracking the spine. I know that some people are probably wincing as I say that, but I like that feel of just having it there and being able to flick backwards and forwards and know exactly where you are in it. So I'm still undecided really about how big a change it's going to be, because some people swear it's the future, but then there are other people who say, I just won't switch.
Well, we've got a youngster here, haven't we, Zoe? I mean, you are of this sort of digital generation. You're of the streaming mentality. Do you prefer ordinary printed books, or are you...
I haven't got a Kindle. I've only seen other people use a Kindle, but I think it definitely is the future, because it just saves so much. Like you said about, you don't have to worry about storage. And sometimes you're reading a book and you can't get comfy because you have to keep it open, and I think actually it is more comfortable having I definitely do want one. I'm just sort of waiting for the prices to go down and then I'm going to buy one. basically, because they're quite new still. So
for holidays they're brilliant, because packing 5 books in your bag, you just
that
pick
is
a Kindle.
True, isn't it?
And
the
a
traveler.
Lot of people read on the train, don't they, and it's a lot smaller, and if you've got a bag, it's quite hefty to have.
And you're not just missing the last page either, which is always the thing. It's usually when you crack the spine.
True.
A poorly bound book and the last page goes, you've had it.
Or you might spill something on it. I mean, I don't know what happens if you spill on a Kindle. I don't know if it stops
They're
working.
Very resilient. And the other thing is, of course, you can, if somebody says, Zoe and I were just talking about a book, if she'd had a Kindle, she could have had it by now.
Yeah.
You know,
and that's the thing, isn't it? It's the same with music.
Say, oh, where are they selling it?
Or tracking them down. Yeah, that's the trouble, isn't it? Some books are out of print and all this sort of thing. Yeah. And I guess that will become a thing of the past. It'll always be there. You
I
just
think
download
it. Definitely it. Is the future.
Yeah, and there's this print on demand as well, which is the other big thing in publishing. I don't know an awful lot about that, but that idea that you phone in for a book and they print it for you
it's
then and
bizarre,
there. It's literally hot off the press,
So it's a busy old programme that you're organising.
Yeah.
If people want to get in touch, because I can kind of imagine that this is going to tap into the Cambridge psyche. There's going to be people out there going, well, I want to do this. This is are you looking for interaction with the audience?
Yeah, we'd like all ideas, particularly if you've written a book, you've published a book, or you know somebody who has. Please contact us. We're on the website and there's a contact email on there. I'm sorry, I can't remember it. I think it might be booknight@cambridge105.
Probably. It's the way most of them work.
.fm, something like that.
If in doubt, just send it to studio and we'll make sure it gets through to you.
But yeah, I mean, I think at future shows, we've talked about maybe reviewing books as well. So if you think you can review a book or come into the studio and discuss it, that would be great as well.
I'll go and get my copy of The Rope Spinner Conspiracy
out.
I'll pass it round you all and you can have a good old read before we come in.
I look forward to that.
Listen, it's been a pleasure to meet you. I can tell by the fire in your eyes that you have a passion for all this, and I think that's what makes for very entertaining and informative radio. So I've not met Alex yet, but I kind of figure if the two of you are anything like that, it's going to be a very interesting programme. It's going to be available as a podcast as well, so if people don't catch it, it's downloadable. So once it's on air tonight, 10 through till 11, after that, so tomorrow early hours, it'll be on the Cambridge 105 website. Just go to cambridge105.fm, go to the podcast section, you can download and listen and listen and listen and listen and listen again. Excellent. Well, thank you so much and good luck with it.
Thank you.
That's Lee Chambers, and don't forget you can catch Book Night tonight on Cambridge 105 at 10 o'clock.